Well, thank you, Dr. Janik. I'm very pleased to have the opportunity to talk on Vavilov, who is one of my heroes, I have to admit. And today I'll be speaking on, with information also from Jim Hancock in MSU, Vavilov's Centers of Origin, or Centers of Diversity, whichever you prefer, the implications and impacts. One of Vavilov's sayings is, life is short, we must hurry. I think he's a man after my own heart. In this presentation, I will first elaborate on Vavilov's accomplishments. I'll discuss several points of view of diversity and origin and domestication of cultivated plants. And I'll finish up on the lasting effects that Vavilov has had on not only the genetic resources of Russia, but the world, and how he has shaped our thinking of plant genetic resource conservation. How can one begin to explain the influence and impact of Nikolai Ivanovich Vavilov? He was a charming, handsome, yes, handsome, Joel, man, a teacher, naturalist, brilliant scientist, and visionary. He spoke so many languages, he could recite Pushkin from memory. His insights have been incorporated deeply into the core of agricultural dogma that we take today for granted. Vavilov was born in November 25th, 1887, a year after the establishment of the Soviet Bureau of Applied Botany. And as federal institutions go, that name changed and was reorganized. The same thing that happens to our federal organization happened in Russia. The name changed from Bureau to Department to Institute over time, but has become associated with Vavilov. And I might point out that Cyrillic looks really scary. How many people know Cyrillic in the audience? A few. Well, really, if you look, it's like a cryptogram. And if you look at the H's are N's, and the backwards N's are I's, and the B's are V's. And so you see, it spells out N.I. Vavilov right there. And in the logo, you see the B, which is a V, and the backwards N, which is an I, and the P, which is an R. So that's Zvir, the Vavilov Research Institute's logo. So really, it's quite a little fun game to try to do some translation from Cyrillic. Anyway, Vavilov took a job, one of his first jobs, working with the Bureau of Applied Botany. And despite the civil war of the Bolshevik Revolution, the cold, hunger, and sickness that was around him, and the brutality of the Russian policy, Vavilov, in some cases, ignored the politics, but he was very aware of famine, and he decided to take up training in agriculture and become devoted to ending famine in Russia and throughout the world. And as Dr. Janik mentioned, he graduated from the Moscow Agricultural University and took his degree from there. He moved to Saratov in the middle of an extensive agricultural region, became an instructor in 1918, and became a professor at the Saratov Higher Agricultural University. But many of his students were women at that time because the men were off fighting the revolution. He and his students worked willingly and diligently, long nights, days and nights. He was quite inspiring in the laboratory and the field plots. And his first trip to Persia, his earliest assignment was actually because there was a disease epidemic going along in the Russian garrisons. They were getting sick and dying because of the food that they were being fed. So Vavilov was sent to Iran to find out what was going on, what was wrong with the food. So what he found out was that there is darnel, or false wheat, which is Lolium temulentum, which is a poisonous grass species that was contaminating the common wheat flour of the bread that the Russian soldiers were eating. But having the opportunity to go to Iran was great for him, because he continued in northern and central regions of Iran and Pamir and other regions of Central Asia. The purpose was to collect early varieties of agricultural plants for testing in northern and droughty areas of Russia, and to determine if the high altitude limits of agriculture. So he was also looking for Persian wheat, so-called, which was reported to be resistant and meant to many diseases. But despite his careful search, he was unable to find that particular type of wheat. But during this expedition, he was able to obtain mung beans, chickpeas, lentils, everlasting pea, beans, species of clover not known that time in Russia. And the materials that he collected in Iran became the foundation of the legumes and grain crops that were stored at the Russian Gene Bank. He obtained 171 different samples on that particular expedition. Well, everybody thinks of the romantic, exciting parts of plant exploration, but there's some challenging parts too. And Vavilov has experienced his set of them. In Syria, he caught malaria. Typhus and bandits attacked him in Egypt. There was a landslide in the Caucasus that delayed him. And not only did he travel on a plane, he survived a plane crash. And then there was the sleepless nights where the lions were pacing outside his tent in the Sahara. So there was a lot of experiences, and he was quite a forward influence despite things. He was not a complainer. He organized an expedition to Afghanistan with his colleagues. And the findings supported the conclusions that Southwest Asia is a center of his of diversity, a center of origin in his determination. And following this hazard and very fruitful expedition to Afghanistan, as Dr. Janik pointed out, Vavilov was awarded the Russian Gold Medal of the Russian Geographical Society. Well, Vavilov went back again to Iran and Afghanistan. He collected plants that were developed locally. He found white-seeded forms of peas, haricot bean, and fodder bean, and other unusual forms of groundnuts and alfalfa. And it was obvious that at this oasis, They were characterized by an abundance of many recessive forms of the traits of cultivated plants. Vavilov's genius began with the concept of plant variability, but purely from the tip of his pen, he realized that our major food crops, which developed over millennia with the input of human hand, must have originated from a central point and successfully dispersed. He began painstakingly to look for those centers of origin through his plant explorations and evaluation. And one of the things, the properties that he realized right off was that there's an unequal diversity around the world. There were regions of highly diverse plants for multiple crops, and this, to him, implied the center of of origin. And he came up with eight centers of origin. Well, Robert Riegel, who was the director of the Soviet Bureau of Applied Botany for more than 15 years, recognized the value of Vavilov. And in 1917, he wrote a letter for recommendation for Vavilov, calling him a talented young scientist who would become the pride of the nation. And he suggested that he be selected as a deputy director of the Bureau of Applied Botany. And so when Vavilov was working in Saratov. He then became the deputy director there. And for the next 2 years, the revolution was heavily waged in St. Petersburg and Moscow. So the progress that was made for the Soviet Bureau of Applied Botany was happening in Saratov under the direction of Vavilov. Now, unfortunately, let's go back for a step. As we just heard about, in 1920, Vavilov presented his law of homologous series, where allied species possess similar heritable variability. And there were several examples in the legumes and in the rosaceous family. But one of the exciting things about this theory that I think of is that it predicted the occurrence of forms and species that had neither been found nor described at this point. So it was a great new concept to go out and explore for plant material that you were predicting to be found in a certain area. So this gave a new and directed purpose for his plant collecting expeditions. So Darrow might have recognized parallelism in variability of similar species, but Vavilov approached the question of parallelism from the genetic viewpoint. He began an extensive comparative study of the international genetic resources at his disposal. Now, unfortunately, in 1920, the end of 1920, Riegel died, and Vavilov was elected to head the Department of Applied Botany at that time. And it was a great opportunity for him to put his new theories into practice. And at that point, he was asked to go to the International Congress on Cereal Diseases in Geneva, New York. And it gave him the opportunity to visit North America, and he hit a little bit of South America at that time, too. But it's exciting to realize that one of the major goals for this trip, for him, was to get acquainted with the work of the American scientists and research centers, and particularly with the activities that were happening in Washington, D.C. at the Bureau of Plant Industry. But also he had heard about a fellow named Luther Burbank, who was a breeder in California. So he traveled on the southern route from the east coast to the west coast to California to visit Burbank. And he was intrigued by Burbank's way of crossing and selecting from large numbers of F1 offspring generations, and realized after he talked to Burbank that Burbank did not really understand the genetic principles involved behind it. And yet he still respected Burbank for his great success in the results of his breeding program. So in a way, like Burbank, Vavilov thought of plant breeding as a way of engineering a plant with desired characteristics. And as Vavilov used to say, evolutia po volich lubica, which means evolution at the will of man. Plant breeding is evolution at the will of man. So on this expedition, he traveled and visited many states in the U.S. But another exciting aspect of this was Vavilov was an out-of-the-box type thinker. When he came to the U.S., he came to set up a special New York office of the Soviet Division of Applied Botany and Selection. So he wanted to establish permanent relations with the U.S. to exchange information, and he came here to obtain seed lots to bring back, equipment, and modern scientific literature, and to bring Russia out of the dark, basically. On his return from the U.S., he went to Europe, Britain, France, Germany, Poland, and visited scientists there. And once again collected commercial varieties and grains that hadn't been available in Russia. After that, Vavilov visited Mediterranean countries in 1926 in Africa, and he went in agrarian cultures to lead an expedition to Syria, Palestine, and Jordan. And he realized after he collected in Sudan and Ethiopia that white lupin and other exotic forms were there. And in the flora of Ethiopia, there were many unique respects that made him consider it to be one of his centers of origin. In 1929, he organized expeditions to China, Japan, Korea, and Taiwan. And upon coming back from this expedition, he stopped in Central Asia, but realized that the plant material there was really not an independent center of diversity, but it was plant materials there were exchanged from the Far East. So Vavilov was very interested in the plant genetic resources of Latin America and had the opportunity to travel there in 32 and 3. And once again, he was invited to a congress, but missed the congress and went plant collecting instead. Here, he understood that the genetic resources of America was to be found in Central and South America instead of North America. There was a lot of grain and other things, but he observed that genetic variation was not equitably distributed. The corn variation of Guadalajara, Mexico, for example, was more than all of the diversity that he found in the United States. So he detected specific varietal structures and received information on the history and origin of a number of crops in North America and realized the wealth of importance of South American genetic resources such as coffee all the way to quinine trees. So all in all, over a course of about 20 years, Vavilov and his colleagues had about 100 different plant collecting explorations, obtaining more than 10,000 species. After his death, more than 40 more international collecting trips were taken by Russian colleagues. He wrote his essays up in his journals, and it was published posthumously in 5 continents. And as Dr. Janik mentioned, he made many entries. 250,000 is the summary that is provided to the Soviet Gene Bank, and provided theories on the distribution of genetic diversity through the centers of origin. As we saw a few minutes ago, there were 8 major centers that he described. But since the death of Vavilov, people have taken apart his original idea and looked at information in different ways. Jack Harlan was a minimalist, and he thought that Vavilov had 3 bullseyes for centers of origin, but Harlan described centers of origin and non-centers of origin and got caught up in the semantics of center of diversity versus center of origin versus where a plant was domestically cultivated, which may or may not reflect the center of origin. But subsequently, Zukovsky broadened the boundaries as additional knowledge of agricultural origins and diversity came to light. Now we can use archaeology, anthropology, cytology, and linguistics to shed new light on plant origin. And we have new techniques such as carbon-14 dating, and most recently, molecular marker technology to help direct this study. So now instead of 8, there seems to be 12 to 15 centers of origin, and most seem to lie within boundaries of the developing world. Another concept of Vavilov's is genetic erosion. When he brought plant material back, he gave instructions to his staff, do not gather plants for your immediate needs, but save these seeds from extinction. So even though people were dying of starvation, they did not eat the seeds in the gene bank. They were conserving these seeds for long-term, for humanitarian reasons. So Vavilov was the first to realize that seed genetic resources needed to be conserved. Well, in the 1960s, there was a green revolution that had begun, and there was a group that formed funded by the Rockefeller Foundation and the Ford Foundation. And they established two different centers, what they called consultative group on international agricultural research. So the CG centers, the first one was the International Maize and Wheat Improvement Program that was in Mexico, and the second center is the International Rice and Research Institute in the Philippines. And Dr. Norman Borlaug was a breeder, a wheat breeder, who started developing wheat strains that could be grown in throughout Mexico. And through his large efforts, there were a number of new cultivars that were able to be planted, and really, Dr. Borlaug saved millions of lives because food was provided where through wheat that could grow where other crop land races could not provide such yields as was provided by those that he produced. And so he won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1970, and he too, like Vavilov, was one that was trying to get rid of famine. He was worried about the privileged world versus the forgotten world, and made sure that we all needed to be aware that the privileged world consists of affluent developed nations comprising 30% of the world population, where most of the people live in luxury, and the forgotten world is made up by people totaling more than half of the world's population that live in poverty, hunger, and fear of famine. So his interest was in feeding all of the people. Now, there was unintended consequences here, because as we replant plants in the Green Revolution, we can lose land races that used to grow where more modern cultivars are now being grown. And so we'll talk about that in a minute. But one of the people that studied under Norman Borlaug was Dr. Sanjaya Rajaram. He was a postdoc, and he started doing wheat breeding in 1969. Dr. Rajaram's crossing of winter and spring wheat varieties, which were distinct gene pools that had been isolated from each other for hundreds of years, when Rajaram combined these, produced some new wheat that could be grown in conditions that were not conducive to other types of growth of previous land races. So Rajaram was asked to succeed Borlaug in heading up the wheat team at CIMMYT. And in 2014, Rajaram was awarded the World Food Prize. Now, he happened to come to Oregon State a couple weeks ago and gave a presentation. And at this presentation, I asked Dr. Rajaram what his opinion was of the greatest lasting accomplishment and impact of Vavilov. And his response was, well, look where the 15 CG research centers are now located. They are completely in his designation of centers of diversity of economically important food crops. The conservation centers are located there. They're guided by Vavilov's principles of conservation and gene bank management. And not only that, there's a dot not present here on the map, but it is north of Norway, up here at Svalbard. We now have the global Svalbard seed vault in Norway, which has 774,000 accessions right now that have been contributed by 53 gene banks and represent 156 crop genera. So Vavilov is still with us and still looking out for our conservation efforts. I followed up with a second question concerning, now that the international treaty is in place, what about the exchange of germplasm and the preservation of wild germplasm? He responded, now that we have this international treaty, there's standard material transfer agreements in place, and so exchanges between the CG centers are proceeding very well. But the challenge right now is that the world is behind in the need for in-situ preservation. And so that aspect of Vavilov's ideas have yet to be realized. So I'd like to summarize. There's many theories that Vavilov has made, including centers of origin of cultivated plants, however broadly or narrowly you interpret them. He was the one that added our focus there. He also had the law of homologous variation and the concept of genetic erosion. These are bases which we all work right now. Posthumously, the All-Union Institute of Plant Industry was named in his honor, as was the Saratov Agricultural University. And he's inspired generations of Russian agricultural scientists following him into plant collection, evaluation, and conservation efforts. So for his principles of gene bank management and genetic resource conservation for humanity, he was our foundation. So at this point, I would like to say the next time that you're out plant collecting or maybe just out walking in the wild, no matter what hill you are on, Vavilov no doubt visited that location before you. And if you look up in those hills, you might just see an apparition of NIV Vavilov smiling down at you. So genetic diversity, keep looking for it and keep preserving it for humanity's sake.